Hello, it's Doug Brown joining Brendan Stone today on Unusual Sources on CFMU 93.3 FM McMaster Radio. Well, over the last few weeks, we've done a couple of interviews about migrant workers in the Dominican Republic. This was about the horrible conditions in which Haitian migrant workers are kept in basically conditions of slavery. We talked to Father Christopher Hartley, a Catholic priest who's been working on their cause for several decades, and he worked for many years in the Dominican Republic. Well, we're going to move closer to home today. We do have migrant workers right here in Canada and right here in Ontario nearby. You may see them occasionally up in Waterdown north of there, vegetable farmlands and the fruit belt of Niagara, and they're very evident in places like Virgil and so on. We're going to be talking today to Stan Rapper, who is with the Union of Commercial and Food Workers, and he has for many years been helping organize and helping improve conditions for farm workers right here in Ontario. Stan, are you there? Hello, Stan?
Hi, Doug.
Oh, hi. Okay, Stan, you know, we have farm workers from the Caribbean and from Mexico right here in Ontario. And could you tell us a little bit, first of all, how many farm workers, foreign farm workers, do we bring in each year? And whereabouts in the province are they primarily located?
Well, for Ontario specific, we take in about probably around 18,000-19,000 every year, and that would be of the 26,000 that we bring in nationally. So Ontario takes the vast majority of the seasonal agriculture workers. They're primarily from Jamaica, the Eastern Caribbean countries, and Mexico under this specific program, and they're seasonal so that they stay for up to 8 months. They can come in January and they have to leave by December the 15th. And they're primarily in the larger agricultural areas, which are, you know, Leamington for the tomato and field crops, Simcoe for the ginseng, tobacco, and field crops, the Niagara region for the apples and the wine industry, some berries. Hamilton has the surrounding areas. Hammonds, they have a lot of field crops, asparagus, cauliflower, some fruit, some wines. The other big area is the Holland Marsh, the Bradford area, which continues to grow, and they do a lot of Chinese vegetables and field crops in those areas.
Now, Stan, what are their working, living, and working conditions like?
Well, the farmer has to provide them accommodations, and they have basically. They're on call 24/7. Most of the workers, because they're away from their families for up to 8 months of the year, they're trying to get as much work as they can. We've seen workers work 60, 70 hour weeks. So they can put in a lot of hours. They usually get Sunday afternoons off, to either go to church or do their laundry or make phone calls or play soccer, you know, those types of things. But they're primarily working 6.5 days a week, nothing short of usually 12 hours a day.
Wow, that's really a very, very long work week. Now, are normal labor standards apply? Do they get overtime when they go beyond a certain number of hours?
No, agriculture workers, whether they're from the Caribbean or Mexico or even Ontario residents aren't covered under the main provisions of the Employment Standards Act. Hours of work, vacation with pay, overtime, agriculture workers have been excluded under the Employment Standards Act basically since it was started in 1947. So not only that, but they're also excluded from the Labor Relations Act, so they're not in a position where they're protected if they wanted to organize and try and bargain collective agreement. So there are basically no unionized farm workers in this province. It's one of two. Alberta and Ontario still ban agriculture workers from joining a union and bargain collectively.
Well, I thought that was a basic human right.
Well, I did too. When I first started on the agriculture worker program, the then Bob Rae government, the NDP government, introduced for the first time in Ontario's history the right of agriculture workers to join a union, and Mike Harris came in right after that, and it was his first piece of legislation removing or revoking the Labor Relations Act for agriculture workers. So we've been, UFCW Canada and the labor movement have been trying to restore that basic human right or labor right to these workers. But so far we have not been able to get that protection for them.
Now, this has gone to court, has it?
We've been, UFCW Canada has taken this issue to the Supreme Court of Canada twice. The Dunsmore decision basically forced the Conservative government to implement legislation. The then Ernie Eves government gave us an association law, and we organized three groups of workers and challenged that law, and the courts basically said it's under provincial jurisdiction and the province should be providing that legislation, but the courts did not force them to do so.
Oh, well, that's a terrible situation. In fact, it just strikes me as so incredible that a whole sector that, I mean, it's poorly paid, it's long hours, and it's, I think most farm workers are in a dangerous occupation. You look at the accident statistics, farm workers are way up there in terms
of...
Yeah,
we say they're the three Ds, dirty, dangerous, and deadly. Not much has changed in the 100 years that the agriculture sector has been in this province, so...
Well, in preparing for this show, I rewatched an outstanding documentary called El Contrato.
Yeah.
It was aired on TVO, I think, about 7 or 8 years ago. And actually, you were one of the subjects in this documentary. So you've been at this for a while.
Yeah, that was 2002, and it was it's basically called The Contract. El Contrato is Spanish for The Contract, and it follows five seasonal Mexican farm workers in Leamington, Ontario, and what happens to them basically over a summer. And it's also when we first opened our first center here in Leamington to provide assistance and help for seasonal agriculture workers. It's over 10 years that production was done. And, unfortunately, not a lot has changed in this province.
And when I watched it, I was so taken aback, to see the farm workers living so crammed together it looked like there were maybe four or five people in one bedroom. Beds just jammed together. And the other thing that really astounded me was and I'm assuming this is one of the better farmers because she allowed the documentary crew free access onto her farm, but at one point she's talking about if there was any trouble, if somebody got drunk or something in town, the police merely called, quote, their owners.
Yes.
And I wow. So it's modern. They're considered like slaves, like their own property.
Yep, the indentured servitude. The notions of individuals being free certainly. In these circumstances, because they're housed on the farms, because they're dependent completely, their work permits, their visas, their jobs, their living conditions, their food, everything really is dependent on their employer, and you're basically at the mercy of your employer, and there are some great employers and there are some horrible employers and there's a whole bunch in the middle. And so depending on who you get in a particular year, that will determine what type of summer you're going to have.
Yeah. And normally a worker should be able to, leave a bad employer and find a better employer. That's just something that goes on, most of the population, all the time. But
yeah, I'm down in Windsor, and there was an author at the University of Windsor that wrote a book, Tende Bassick, and she basically, the title or what she wrote about was Free to be Unfree. So employers will always tell you that, they keep coming back, so it's got to be a good program. The fact is that they're getting workers from areas that really are destitute or have really high unemployment. There's no work, and so they're happy to get work, but they are human beings, and I think people forget that we're dealing with human lives here.
Yeah, and they're from countries that have a lot of unemployment very low levels of income.
The other sad part about it is that the trade agreements and this global food network that we have forced a lot of these workers from Jamaican workers and Caribbean workers and Mexican workers and Guatemalan workers who used to have small farms and be subsistent farmers can't compete with these big multinationals and have lost their enterprises and their properties and are now forced to work for these big international corporations and corporate farms across North America.
Yeah. Typically, how much are they paid?
Well, they normally would get the minimum wage. And there are some farms and some products that do what we call piecework. And so depending on how good the product is, whether you've been the first round of harvest or you're on your third is dependent on how much money you make. So it varies with the types of farm work that there are. But generally, they'll make the minimum wage.
And what about their accommodation and food?
Well, we like to think that we've made some gains in that area. Some of the farmers, I'm in the Leamington Windsor area, and some of the bunkhouses here, they got satellite TVs and pool tables and, really nice accommodations. And then you can go down the road and see some that, they're pretty beat up. And, I've actually seen workers that live in barns or old trailers, and we've seen it all from BC to the East Coast. You'll get a little bit of everything, and like I said, there's some good ones and bad ones, but it's really difficult to try and force some change, and so we're really dealt with trying to phone the fire department saying their fire traps or their certain equipment isn't working, or dealing with kind of one-on-one type of situations rather than some kind of a national standard that should be in place.
And what about benefits that other workers have? For example, do they pay unemployment insurance?
They pay unemployment insurance, and unfortunately, we had to just release a report the beginning of this year called The Great Canadian Ripoff. They basically cut the parental benefit accessibility for these workers, so they're not eligible for the layoff, the regular layoff provisions, which most of us know that if you get laid off, you can apply for unemployment insurance. Because they're non-residents, they can't really get that. They return home. And so they were eligible for the parental benefit if they had a child born that year and they made enough hours. They could take care of their child while they were off work. But the federal government hatched that program in the fall of last year, and it has really impacted these workers specifically. I mean, they're paying with their employers around $24 million a year into EI, and really aren't eligible to collect the benefit anymore.
Yes, they're paying insurance that they cannot get any benefit out of. The other thing I noticed watching El Contrado was, you know, it was only men on these farms.
Yeah.
So, you know, they leave their wives and families at home and that. And I understand that your union has been trying to work with Mexico on the gender-based discrimination that's obviously occurring.
We launched a human rights complaint not only in Mexico but also in Quebec. We're just waiting for the Human Rights Commission to give us authority to move ahead on that, and we plan to launch it in every province where the vast majority of these workers are. We've also worked really closely with the Labor Studies Program at McMaster, and Don Wells and others from McMaster, not only doing placements for students out of the Labor Studies Program with us in our program, but we did a fairly substantial research piece around family separation and the social impacts, trying to calculate and understand what family separation means. This program's been in place for 50 years, and these workers have been coming for 8 months of the year. What are the impacts of the family and the social fibers and networks of those communities and sending countries and those individual families and individuals themselves? And Don Wells and McMaster have done some great work on that, and I really think that it puts the human face, the real human tragedy of migrant workers, whether they're farm workers or in the oil and gas or construction or wherever, this movement of workers globally around the world is having impacts on our communities and our societies. And not too many people have been talking about that and researching that, and I commend the work that McMaster University has done on that area.
Well, there's certainly all sorts of horror stories. We just covered the situation of Haitian migrant workers in the Dominican Republic. And I just noticed a news item the other day about Qatar, a very wealthy country, and the number of workers that die there—they have to work in atrocious conditions of high heat and lack of water and cooling and so on.
Yeah.
So it just looks like employers in different countries trying to not pay or just pay bare survival wages.
Yeah, it's the spiral downwards, right? It's who can get the job done for the less amount. I'm not talking just wages. I'm talking about the benefits and the basic poverty levels in Canada, and I think across North America and probably around the world. There's an addiction of employers to these temporary foreign worker programs. And I'm sure that one, it's not sustainable, but two, that the cost and the impacts are going to come back to haunt all of us, and as a society, as a country, you know, I think that we can do much better.
Well, that's for sure. Now, you mentioned earlier about migrant foreign workers in the tobacco fields. When I was young, I remember picking tobacco was kind of a sought after migrant work because the pay was fairly good.
Yep, and there were a lot of Canadians and local people that were happy to get those jobs during the summer because it was peace work and it was hard work, but you were paid fairly decent, and the vast majority of those jobs are now temp foreign worker jobs. I think it says a lot about we have a lot of rural communities with high unemployment, a lot of youth unemployment. These employers in these corporate farms aren't looking for local people. Yes, these workers that are being brought in are highly skilled and very good at what they do, but we also have to think about what's happening with our own rural economies and where's all that money going, and why can't we sustain seasonal work in these operations? And really, about the way that these workers are treated and what's expected of them, and a lot of Canadians just won't tolerate the type of treatment and the way that that things are being done, and so they move on to the McDonald's or whatever, but these workers will endure because they're impoverished.
Yeah, and actually, speaking of McDonald's, I don't know if I do know for to some extent they're involved, but even those kind of jobs, employers are starting to bring in temporary foreign workers.
Well, they're certainly trying, and the cases in BC where the employers wouldn't even look at the resumes of Canadian students who were trying to get summer jobs, I think underlines the real problems with the program, and it's really driven. These programs are driven by employers. They're made for employers with little care or acknowledgement of what's going on in the local communities or what the needs are of the people in the community that they're supposed to be serving, and so there's a disconnect and people have been talking about the temp foreign worker programs for a long time, that they're misguided, they're band-aid solutions to a broken immigration system. We can do a lot better, and in Canada we've proven to do better when we had a good immigration system and people and their families were allowed to stay and they would invest in our economies and buy houses and take care of their families and work hard. That model for a long time worked very well in Canada, and I think we need to get back to that kind of notion.
That's for sure. And that thought hit me when I was watching El Contrado, because the workers they were focusing on, I thought they would be excellent immigrants. They would be a great asset to the country, but instead
I met a guy from Tobago, Trinidad and Tobago, last year. 41 years in the program, he'd been coming, spent more time in Canada than he did in his home country. I think he had like two employers over the 41 years, and never had access to a path to citizenship or status. I think that's just wrong. That these guys are hardworking. Clearly the employers want them and need them, and so why separate them from their family? Why not allow them to stay and become good citizens and participate in our economy the way that everyone else has?
For sure. The other thing that I was wondering about, Stan, was, being 8 months or more away from your family, and in this modern day where, you can fly back and forth very easily, I'm sure it would be really good if the workers had an opportunity to fly back periodically to stay in touch with their own family. You know.
Yes, that's the humanity side that. A lot of these farms, there are upsides and downsides. So you're really busy for, you know, months and months, and then there's a bit of a break before the harvest. Why not let them fly back home, or why not allow their families to come up to visit them? I mean, there are things that can be done. This program has been in place for over 50 years, and it really hasn't changed in 50 years, and UFCW Canada and the AWA and the labor movement across the country have been arguing that, you know, they say it's the best practice model, and I say it's a dinosaur, that it needs an overhaul, and immigration and providing status and a path to citizenship is just one of the pieces that we're saying needs to be dealt with. Coverage under the labor laws and employment standards laws. Access to good medical attention and being able to be part of the community rather than isolated on these rural farms. All of these types of things can be done quite easily. It's just a matter of having the political will to do it.
For sure. And Stan, I just want to say how much I appreciate the efforts that you're making and UFCW is making and others to try to improve the situation for these.
Well, I appreciate that. We certainly appreciate doing work with McMaster University, and I think in general the Canadian people, the population, understand this issue fairly well. I mean, we're all immigrants, unless you're First Nations. We all came from somewhere,
yeah.
And I think people should be given the common courtesy or the some basic standards and national standards, and that's really what the labor movement is talking about, some fairness for these workers. If they need to be here and employers need them and want to pay them, let them stay.
Absolutely. Stan, thanks so much for being with us today. And
happy to do it, Doug. Thank you very much.
Okay, and that was Stan Rapper with the UFCW, who has been working many years with temporary foreign workers, agricultural workers from the Caribbean and Mexico.